Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
Sports Radio 810 WHB, the Interurban Lofts proudly present The Border Patrol with Stephen St. John and Nate Buchanan.
Good morning, my neighbors!
It's showtime!
Whit Merrifield's been a staple in this organization for a really long time, really special player. A lot of great memories with him as a player, and we're thankful for his contributions, as well as Cam Gallagher. I think this was the 11th year of Gallagher's in our system. He did a really admirable job for us. He's a winner, and appreciative of everything he did with us as well. So, interesting day. It was a busy day. A lot of late action. I think our scouts did a tremendous job in allowing us to be prepared for whatever may come our way. And at the end of the day, and really at the end of this week, and even say this month, when we look back, we traded five players that were on our 40-man roster. We traded a comp pick, and we were able to acquire 12 players. And when you add those 12 players to our recent draft, I think our organization looks quite different here in the last 2 weeks. So pretty excited about it. Excited about the players we acquired and ready to answer any questions you have.
Come on.
City, this is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Wednesday, August 3rd, 2022. Stephen St. John in St. Joe at the Stony Creek Hotel and Conference Center. We've got Nate Buchady and Marco Marquez back in Kansas City. Thanks for listening to us on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And of course, thank you for watching us on 38 The Spot. Today on the show, we're going to talk to Mike Boddicker at 7 o'clock and get his thoughts on the action right before the trade deadline yesterday. The Royals made a couple of moves, so we'll get Mike's reaction to that. We're going to talk to Matt Derrick at 7:30 from ChiefsDigest.com and get his thoughts on what has happened up here in training camp this week, and also his reaction to what Orlando Brown Jr. had to say in the interview tent. Also, Dave Tobe with some interesting comments. We're going to hear from Dave Tobe. I'm going to play that for you coming up this hour. And then tell us what we'll have after I leave for practice. Nate Buchady and or Marco Marquez, please.
Go ahead, Marco. You booked our guest at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, 8 o'clock. We're going to have Max Reaper of Royals Review on, editor-in-chief over there. You got 8:30.
Brian, Brandon McAnderson. I did a Ron Burgundy right there. Brandon McAnderson, the former running back, Orange Bowl winner for the Jayhawks, and sideline reporter for KU football. I'm going to be playing in a celebrity softball tournament with him that apparently he was the MVP of last year when he hit a big home run for the Boys and Girls Club in Lawrence, Kansas. And so I thought, well, let's have Brandon on. We'll talk about that event a little bit, and we'll talk about a little KU football as well. So Brandon McAnderson will join us at 8:30. And then we'll have the one and only Nick Leckie to talk K-State, Chiefs, and everything else in the 9 o'clock hour.
Okay, so let's get to it. The Royals made a couple of moves, and I was ready to be very angry. I was on the program yesterday with Todd Lebo, and you know there were still a couple of hours left in the trade deadline. And things were not looking good. But I was hopeful, okay, maybe something will happen right before the deadline. And, I mean, it went right down to the wire. You know, the Merrifield trade didn't get tweeted out by Mark Feinstein until, I mean, I think like 4:59 or so, just like a minute before the trade deadline. And then the Cam Gallagher trade wasn't announced, or we didn't hear about that until after the trade deadline had already passed. And I'll be honest with you, I was ready to blast the Royals. I mean, it would have been what's the word? I don't know. It would have been mind-boggling had they not made any moves because of the tremendous activity that was going on around Major League Baseball and how so many teams were ready to wheel and deal. It would have made no sense had the Royals, you know, not made any trades. And honestly, they should have made more. You know, I'm not going to complain the way I was because, you know, I had time to sit there and think, well, what am I, you know, how are we going to approach this? And what are the disappointment and what are the excuses going to be? You know, how could they not in this market, the situation they're in with the tradable commodities that they have, how could they just stand pat? But they didn't. And they did trade Whit Merrifield. And they did make a move and trade Cam Gallagher. The number of relievers traded, boy, it seems like they could have made a deal for Josh Stallmont. They could have made a deal for Scott Barlow. They could have made, you know, more of a minor deal for Amir Garrett. But they didn't. They kept their bullpen together. I think it's a missed opportunity. I can't say it's a mistake yet, because if somehow they put it together and they contend with Barlow and Stallmont in this bullpen in the next year or two, and they're a couple of the reasons why they contend, somehow get a wild card spot or win the division, and Barlow's the closer and Stallmont the setup guy, well, then you can't say it's a mistake. Now, that sounds ridiculous and that sounds pie in the sky, but you got to leave that door open, because that's, you know, you never say never. And so that's the only thing that could justify them holding on to those guys. But they did, they had to trade Whit Merrifield. It was time to move on. It was time to move on for Whit. It was time to move on for the organization. It was time to move on for most of the fans. And it's just, man, they traded him to Toronto. is that just a coincidence? Is that just a... No pun intended. Was that just a shot at Whit Merrifield from the organization? Was that really the best deal for the Royals? Was there some... were the Royals being vindictive? When I saw that, I had to make sure. I almost thought it was a parody account. You know? I was like, is the onion behind this? What's going on here? Did they really trade him? Did they really trade him to Toronto, the place he couldn't go, the place he couldn't play when the Royals made that road trip up there? And so I found that, I mean, it was, I still don't know what my reaction to that is. I'm like, are you kidding me? But they did. That's what happened. And there you go. But I could tell you that was really interesting, Nate, that they traded Whit Merrifield to Toronto. They end up getting two prospects, second baseman / outfielder Samad Taylor, who is ranked as Toronto's number 16 prospect, according to MLB.com, and now he's ranked number 23 in Kansas City's system. And right-hander Max Castillo, who slots in as Kansas City's number 13 prospect. And they also traded backup catcher Cam Gallagher to the San Diego Padres for outfielder Brent Rooker, who at one time was on the AL Bada Bings, Nate Buchady. And so, how about that? There's
all right.
A little history with Brent. He can hit at AAA. He has not hit in the major leagues. So you're taking a flyer on him to see if somehow perhaps he could put it together. But maybe organizational depth. I don't know what kind of chance they're going to give him. But he's put up some good numbers at AAA. So just your reaction to what happened for the Royals before the trade deadline.
Well, overall, I would say, much like you, I'm a little disappointed that they weren't even more transactional than they were. Hearing the comments from J.J. Piccolo there about trading five guys away and all the people that they brought in, maybe if some of the trades they made happened all at the same time, closer to the deadline, we'd feel like they did more. I don't know, because maybe they spread it out a little bit if you go all the way back to when Santana was traded. But, yeah, I mean, I was thinking Barlow, Staumont, Keller, Taylor. I thought all those guys were good trade chips that could have brought something. So overall, I'm a little disappointed that they didn't do more. But I do agree with you. I think that they needed to trade Whit Merrifield. That needed to happen for both parties. And I know I've heard from some people that hear me and you saying that and think we just want to run Whit Merrifield out of town. It's on both sides there. I think it was time for him to play somewhere else. I think he felt that way. and it was time for the organization. It was time. It was time for both of them to go their own ways. And Whit Merrifield, in many ways, should be remembered incredibly fondly by people in Kansas City for what he did and being such a solid pro for the team during some dark times. And in some ways, he kind of got screwed over a little bit. You know, like, he should have been the one that got called up for the World Series. All that stuff. But it just that had run its course. And so, I think they needed to do that. They did. They needed to make that move, and they did. So that's, I guess, the most important thing out of it. And I find it equally hilarious. I don't know. You know, just when you think that baseball's lost its beautiful poetry and the things that made it so wonderful, then something like weirdly poetic like this happens. The fact that he's traded to Toronto after everything that has happened is I don't even know. And I'll admit, I don't know. I haven't seen any quotes from him yet. I assume that conversations were had with the Blue Jays that, like, he told them, yes, I absolutely will get vaccinated if I get traded to you. Or they're just good with him only playing when they're in the United States. And I mean, I don't know how that all works. But I find it all hilarious that's where he ends up getting traded.
And you know, and that's their issue to deal with now.
Yeah.
So, we'll,
yep.
Whatever happens, happens. But, you know, as far as what they got back, you know, Max Castillo is, he's up with the big team. He was with Toronto, He'd thrown, and we saw him when the Royals played Toronto. He's thrown 20 innings, 15 hits, 20 strikeouts, 5 walks, a 3.05 ERA, 0.97 whip. Between Double A and Triple A, at Double A this year in about 29 innings, he had a 3.10 ERA and a 1.21 whip, 35 strikeouts in 29 innings. And then at Triple A, he had a 0.66 ERA and a 0.74 whip, 27 innings, 29 strikeouts. I mean, you gotta like what you see there. 23 years old. Those are really good numbers, really good strikeout numbers at Double A, Triple A, and at the major league level. So I like that. Samad Taylor's viewed more as a utility guy. Triple A this year, he had 9 homers, 45 ribbies, and 23 stolen bases. A slash line of .258, .337, .426. And so he plays second base and plays the outfield. So I think, you know, you could view him more as a utility guy. And then Brent Rooker, the guy they got for Cam Gallagher. Remember, he was traded from the Twins to the Padres in that Taylor Rogers, Emilio Pagan deal that took place in Chris Paddock right before the season started. He's 27 years old. He rakes a Triple A, but I think he'll be more organizational depth in the outfield. But, I mean, in 2019, hit a slash line of .281, .398, .535 at Triple A. He got a cup of coffee and then got hurt in 2020. Then in 2021, he actually had 189 at-bats with the Minnesota Twins. His average was horrible, .201, but he hit 9 home runs in 189 at-bats, so he showed some pop. And then this year in Triple A for San Diego, slash line .272, .385, .605. He had 19 home runs in 61 games and just only had played in a couple of games for the Padres. And so organizational depth, a guy that has shown he can rake at AAA, and a guy that has shown some pop, has shown some power in his brief time, his brief looks in the major leagues, but he's 27 years old. So either he'll be a late bloomer and he could actually compete for some at-bats out in the outfield, or you're just looking at organizational depth and a guy that could be a good bat off the bench that could rake at AAA that maybe isn't quite good enough to have an everyday job in the major leagues, but he's strictly an outfielder slash DH, and that's what they got for Cam Gallagher. But there's something there. There's some power there. And so that's briefly what the Royals got in return for Whit Merrifield and Cam Gallagher in the two trades they made yesterday. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk Chiefs after this. Live from training camp up in St. Joe, Missouri, it's Stony Creek Hotel and Conference Center on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Good song, Marco. Reminds me of my days at Missouri Western State University, listening to music with Jim Clutter in my dorm room. Thank you. All right, welcome back to the Border Patrol and Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're going to play a little game here. We're going to play different clips from the Orlando Brown Jr. press conference yesterday, and then we will have Nate Buchady react. And Marco, if you want to say anything, you feel free to chip in. Oh, I saw your dad yesterday, too.
Yeah, he showed me a selfie you guys took. Glad you guys were able to run into each other.
And that was that young man with him was?
That is my nephew, Elijah.
Okay. You know what? He's a polite young man.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, he's a good kid. That was his first training camp yesterday, and he was very excited. Got
that
two
stands
autographs.
Out to me when a young kid knows how to talk to adults and is polite. I like so tip of the cap. And also your dad was so funny. He was trying to, you need me to carry anything for you? Okay, I guess you know he saw I was hurting. And I was gonna say yeah. Can you carry me to my car? Yeah, I don't have any equipment, but I got me. If you wanna throw me over your shoulders, sir. But I was glad to see them, take a picture with them, and I didn't see if he was able to get any autographs at the end or whatever, but I tried to give him some tips and let him know when practice was over, so that was good to see them.
Oh, well, thank you, thank you. Yeah, he was texting me saying, I can help Steven carry stuff from the hotel. Or, I'm like, yes. Here's his number. You text him. I'm going to...
Can you help carry Steven from the hotel? Orlando Brown Jr., who appeared to be in a good mood, and I like it. He just walked into the tent, and I started with the questions of Orlando Brown Jr.
Orlando, how did you feel physically out there today?
Yeah, I felt good. I was excited to get out there and get some live reps, man. Obviously, I've been doing a ton of stuff, training on my own and things like that, but it felt good, man, to get out there with the guys.
What made this the right time to report to camp as opposed to last week or next week or the week after? What made this the right time?
Yeah, man, I missed a lot of ball up until this point. And, obviously, man, I missed the locker room. I missed the coaches, everyone here in the building. And I know how important this five-day stretch is to Coach Reed and everybody here at KC, man. So, I just didn't feel right sitting at home missing out on this. This is something that I want to be a part of, man. I was brought here to help win Super Bowls, and this week is very important to our progression.
What was that like for you, sitting out all the OTAs, mini camp back in the spring? What was that like for you?
Man, it's always hard. I pride myself on being a leader. I pride myself on being someone that wants to be here for his teammates and showing up every day, bringing the most positive energy that I can bring to the locker room and on the field, man. And so it was difficult to be away from it for so long, but the understanding was that I had to do what I had to do.
When you came here, you wanted to be here for the long term.
Absolutely.
Has anything that's happened in the last few months changed that?
No, man, not at all. I want to be here. I want to finish my career here in Kansas City. And I'm sure questions out there, but to me, man, with the contract situation, it just wasn't enough guarantees, and I want to be here for the rest of my career in Kansas City, and that's really important to me.
Okay, let's start there. Any reaction to what to those comments from OBJ?
Well, I heard Todd Lebo nitpicking at what he had to say. Todd's a nitpicker. He was picking all kinds of nits, and he said, "Well, if the 5-day stretch was so important to him, he would have gotten there earlier than yesterday, where he's not like even ready to fully participate in the padded practice." Well, that was a lot of P's. Fully participate in padded practice. I don't know. I'm just glad he's there. I don't really care what the real answer is as to why he showed up 2 days ago and why yesterday was his first day of practice. I'm just glad that he's there. And he, to me, he understands that there's nothing for him financially to gain by holding out. Once he and the Chiefs couldn't agree to a contract, he was going to play for that franchise tag or he wasn't going to play. And so I think that he could have decided to wait to sign the tender till later if he wanted to. The fact that he decided to go ahead and sign it and get to camp just about in time for the full padded practices, I'm good with it. So I don't really care. If he'd have showed up on Sunday as opposed to Monday, I don't think that's going to make a big difference on the season.
Okay, here I asked Orlando Brown Jr. about his emotions while the Chiefs and his agent were trying to get something done before the deadline.
What were your emotions as you approached the deadline and then you find out you're not going to sign a deal? How did you react? What were some of the conversations you had with the agent?
Yep.
Well, from your vantage point, how did that process play out?
Yeah, I don't want to get too detailed on that, but very emotional, man. I've spoke to, pretty much a lot of people here in the front office and Coach Reed, and everyone understands, man. I love ball. I love blocking for Pat Mahomes. I love putting the Chiefs, logo on my helmet, man, and I really enjoy being here. I know that time will tell and things will get taken care of with time, man. I just look forward to getting out there on the field this year.
It's not enough guarantees. That's what kept you from signing the deal?
Yeah, not at all, man. It's not about the money. You know what I mean? I want to be here for the rest of my career.
Nate Buchady.
Want to be in Kansas City the rest of his career. It just seems like that, I guess, that seems surprising considering what the Chiefs offered him a pretty good amount of money and he didn't accept it. It seems surprising to hear him say, "Yeah, I want to be a Chief for the rest of my career."
Not about the money; it's the guarantees.
Well, that is money, though, right? That's guaranteed money is what that, it's not like guaranteed timeshares or, you know, we're they're negotiating in money. So, you know, that I guess we're parsing words here, but and I don't blame anybody for it's a business. He's got to do what's best for him. I don't begrudge that. Professional athletes have a small window where they can make a whole lot of money. And I don't blame them for maximizing that window. I think I would probably do the same thing. So I don't begrudge Orlando Brown Jr. trying to get his at all. It just was kind of interesting to hear him say that. Like, well, I want to be a Chief for the rest of my career. It seemed like, well, you had an opportunity to sign a contract extension that would have paid you a lot of money. But that's, well, you know, we'll see.
He wants to be a Chief for the rest of his career, but maybe isn't willing to sign a more team-friendly contract than...
Yeah,
and see what Kelsey or somebody.
Yeah, and that's fine. You know, I respect that.
All right, let's move on to clip number four, Marco. Here, Orlando Brown talks a little bit about his conversations with Andy Reid and Brett Veach. I took a picture of Veach talking to Orlando Brown Jr. with his hand on his shoulder on the field that a lot of people were retweeting and speculating on what was being said in that conversation. And so Orlando Brown talks about what he said to Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and also whether or not he feels like he has something to prove this year.
Yeah, man. I mean, we've you know, me and Veach have talked. Me and Coach Reid have spoken. You know, man, understanding this business is business. You know what I mean? And at the end of the day, that part is behind us for now, man. We're moving forward. I just, like I said, man, I'm here to win Super Bowls. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, that's what I care about.
You feel like you have something to prove to get the contract offer that you want next season?
Yeah, man. I mean, I always feel like I got something to prove. You know what I mean? I was a third-round pick. I had the worst combine in history. the list goes on and on, man. So the chip's always been really big. You know, what does this necessarily mean? I mean, I don't know if it's that much different from the past. You know what I mean? I always feel like I got a lot to prove.
All right, we'll play a couple of more clips from Orlando Brown Jr. after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Here's a couple of more clips from Orlando Brown Jr. yesterday as he spoke to the media. Here, Brown says he doesn't feel like he's hit his ceiling yet.
Yeah, I want to progress in almost every way, shape, and form and fashion, man. I want to be a better run blocker, a better pass blocker, a better leader, you know, allowing them to count on me when they need me most. You know, that was something that I feel like I struggled with a little bit last year, not putting myself in the best position as games were close or on certain third downs or in close games against certain talents. So that's something that I definitely want to improve on.
Is there a moment that you can sort of pinpoint from last year that sort of made you aware that this is where I want to get better?
Yeah, I mean, all of them, man. You know, I would say it probably definitely started sometime in training camp, you know, the understanding of that. So, you know, man, I just want to progress and continue to get better. I don't think I've even come close to my ceiling yet.
Some interesting comments there, Nate.
Not even close to a ceiling yet.
How he felt like he didn't come through for the Chiefs in situations, you know, when the game was close and they needed him most.
I like hearing that. I like hearing that from any player that feels like they take some ownership over the disappointment of what happened last year. You know, and if that's the case, then that person's going to be more motivated as they're getting ready for the season. So I like a lot of what I had to hear from Orlando Brown yesterday.
Finally, I feel like I just needed to ask him, you know, what his feelings are towards, if there are any hard feelings between him and the organization now that there was not a deal signed and he's playing under the franchise tag. And so that's pretty much how we ended the press conference.
So bottom line for you, any hard feelings at all with the organization now that you're here?
Oh, not at all, man. It's no hard feelings, period. You know what I mean? Like, nothing like that. It's, like I said, I appreciate everyone in this building, man. They give me opportunity to play football at the highest level and to be a left tackle. So I've got no animosity towards anyone in the building. It's nothing like that. You know what I mean? Like I said before, man, business is business, and I'm here to win Super Bowls. That's all I care about is winning football games.
No hard feelings. He's the here to win Super Bowls and here to win football games, Nate Buchady.
But he still has a chip on his shoulder. Good. You know?
He should.
Yeah, good. That's usually when you get the best out of people, right? Is when they got something to prove a little bit, a little extra motivation. So he's got a lot. I love a guy in a contract year. And when you're on the franchise tag, you're in a contract year, right? So let's go.
Where?
Let's go to St. Joe. You know, we'll go to training camp.
Done.
Let's go all the way to the Super Bowl.
Yes, here. Okay, so let me throw a curveball at you, Marco. I'll play a couple. You want to hear a couple of clips from rookie George Karlaftis?
Karlaftis.
He's a hoss.
Yeah, he is.
That's a big, strong bull out there. George Karlaftis, it's been interesting pretty much after every practice. Frank Clark has had George Karlaftis and some of the young defensive linemen working with them after practice and going through some drills and giving them some advice and working with them on hand placement and some other things. And so George Karlaftis talked about what it's been like to learn under Frank Clark.
Yeah, you know, well, it's not just Frank, really. It's the whole group. You know, they're trying to take me under their wing, you know, from Frank and Chris to Mike and Turk. Everybody in the group's just coming together as one, you know. Obviously, Frank helps me out after every practice, and Chris helps me out in his own way. And everyone really helps me out in their own way, you know, because they're, you know, we're trying to have the strongest group possible. So we're trying to have to bring everyone along.
Can you describe what Frank has taught you after, in those sessions after practice?
I don't want to give away his secrets. But, you know, just little things about the game, man, like the little vet intricacies that he knows, like stuff that was passed down to him from guys like Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett. He's passing that stuff on to me in order to help me be successful and this team be successful in order.
All right, so then I asked George how that started between him and Frank Clark.
Comes to help from Frank, did you approach him? Did he approach you? How did that start?
I think it might have been mutual. You know, at first, you know, he says, what's up? Like, you know, introduce himself, this, and that. But I think, you know, I kind of started asking him, hey, what are you doing? This, and that. And then he took me after practice. He's like, hey, I do a couple things after practice. You want to get with me? And then I've been getting with him every single day.
You want to get with me? Yes, I do. And so that's good. Frank Clark trying to help out the young lion in camp, George Karlaftis. We will take a break back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Okay, Nate, I want you to pay close attention to this next clip. I'm basically going to play the entire Dave Tobe media opportunity where he spoke with the media in the interview tent after practice yesterday, because he answers a lot of questions here, and he gives us a lot of good information about position battles and who's got the inside track to make this football team because of their roles on special teams. And if you're going to listen to, if you're concerned about position battles and who's going to make this team, and if you have questions about some players, listen to what Dave Tobe says. He even tells you, if it comes down to a position battle, the difference maker is going to be how they impact special teams. And he says a lot here. If you're willing to listen, are you willing to listen?
I got my ears open, man. I'm ready to go.
I want you to take notes, and then you tell me what stood out to you and who you feel real good about making this team after listening to Dave Tobe. Now, he talks about some other stuff, but just listen for the different nuggets he offers up here during yesterday's press conference. Here is Dave Tobe.
What's up, everybody? Haven't seen you in a long time. How you doing? I've seen you, but haven't really talked to you.
Dave, we know how you feel about McColl's return. Do you feel like you have another dynamic option?
After watching today, I don't feel like I have anything because we dropped the ball a bunch of times. But, no, really, I like McDuffie. I think McDuffie's got a real shot. Sky Moore, you know, he got injured today, but he's very promising, too. Now, both of those guys, I mean, McDuffie did it in college. Sky really didn't do it. So he's kind of like a work in progress. Every time he's out there, he's getting better and better. He's got a really good sense for the ball reads and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm excited about getting all, you know, both of those guys in there in the preseason, see what they can do.
Who are some of the other young guys that have stood out to you so far?
Sticking on a returner end of it, Pacheco as a kick returner, he's another guy that's going to start off. We're going to start him off as the guy and see if he can handle it, see how he does in the preseason. A few games we'll be able to know right away. But he's promising too. Now he's a big guy, obviously, you know, 215 plus, running a 4.37. So, you know, that's kind of scary back there. If we can get that thing going, you know, catch you coming forward and doing what we do with our scheme, he's got a real shot at being able to come out the other end. So, you know, a lot like Pringle did. You know, we use Pringle that way. We think we could do that with Pacheco. Some of the other guys, you know, Cook is doing a good job as a cover guy. Watson is a, you know, he's not a rookie, but he's a guy, you know, probably could take Kemp's, but, you know, we lost like six guys, you know, just, you know, so on special teams, I lost like six, four phase players. So we got to replace them with guys. Watson is a guy that might be able to take Kemp's spot in a lot of things. So, and he's doing well on offense, which is important.
What's it right away? Besides, you know,
what tells you?
Yeah,
oh, well, first of all, they get established on offense or defense like they're a guy. Like they're going to be somebody that's in the mix. So then you know, you're working drills and you can see that he's got a sense about geometry, blocking, you know, his knee bend, and then his toughness. You can kind of get a little bit of a sense for it, but you get more of that when you go in the games and get the, you know, full speed tackling and stuff like that. But you can kind of tell when a guy's got it, when he doesn't.
If Juan Checo's going to be the guy, do you mean on
punt? I mean, on kickoff returns.
And then punt's still Hardman.
Yeah, Hardman right now, obviously, and then we're going to try to work McDuffie in and Sky. You need to get somebody else doing it because, I mean, if McColl's getting a lot of reps as much as Tyreek did, you got to cut him back a little bit. And we really need to establish a couple more guys.
But you lost Neiman. You mentioned McDaniel and Watts, who have been around for a while. This
yeah.
Difficult.
I mean, Watts, you got, you know, the other guys that can replace Watts is, it's slipping my mind right now, but Bush is a guy that's in there for that. And, you know, just who else? I mean, Cook, I talked about, you know. I mean, there's holes everywhere. So, I mean, it's going to be something that...
Does it feel like a complete reset, I guess?
It does. It is. It is. It's going to be a complete reset. You know, it's going to be tough. And really, for us, it's hard to tell what a guy can do in practice because we don't do anything live. It's really the games, you know. So the Bears game is going to be huge for us, and the Washington game is obviously going to be huge for us. And we might be making decisions all the way up to the Green Bay game, so...
Dave, Watson said one of the reasons he wanted to kill me was because of the emphasis you guys put on special teams.
So that's good to hear.
Him that says that.
He's just got a, you could just tell it's important for him. You know, you could tell how he is in meetings. You could tell he's a leader. You know, he's not a vocal leader, but he's a leader by example. He's just attention to detail. You could just tell he knows what it's. He knows the importance, how important special teams is. You know, for him as a player, you know, he's not going to be a number one or a two guy, but he knows how important it is to be a guy.
Is that combination of size and speed?
Yeah, that combination is perfect, and you know, he could do a lot of things as far as, you know, he could catch punts too as well. But you know, he's not a guy that we want to rely on, you know, to take it the distance. He's more of a blocker type guy for us.
You mentioned so many moving pieces on your special teams. You got so many core people gone from last year, but you do have at least Fountain returning. How beneficial is it for him to have spent time last year?
Yeah, Fountain's a guy that we're going to rely on. You know, him and Gray, these are carryover guys. Like Gray, he was a four-phase guy for us, so we're counting on him to be a guy for sure. And he's doing outstanding, Gray. And then Fountain is a guy, you know, obviously he got hurt, you know, early, you know, late, and then we lost him. But he's a guy that played a lot of downs for us, so he's in the mix too as well. I should have mentioned him as well as Watson. There's a battle. You know, there's a battle over there, and it's going to come down to special teams.
So it's important to talk to some of the low guys that are looking to make the roster. Has anyone stepped up? far as like asking you those kind of questions?
I think I touched on a lot of them. You know, Carter is a guy, a linebacker that, you know, he's not a rookie, but he's a guy that, you know, he might take Neiman's spot. You know, he might be in that role. You know, Elijah Lee is doing outstanding. I mean, he's a guy, you know, he's not a rookie, but he's a veteran. He's got veteran experience on special teams, counting on him. You know, that's hands down.
A couple more.
Just talk to Tommy a little bit later. What would you like to see him do in this year's training camp, taking this trip?
Tommy, just consistency. He's you know, he's done a good job. Those three guys, I'm fortunate that those guys are back, you know, because I don't have to really worry about those guys. I can spend more time with the core guys where I need to, where most of my time needs to be spent. So I'm fortunate to have all those guys back. But Tommy, a little bit more consistency. Bucker, I'm not going to mess with Bucker. He's doing well. His leg strength looks real good right now. He had over 50 yesterday, had a real good day. He's 100%. So we just got to keep him going in the right direction. And then Winchester just keeps getting better every day, every year, I should say. You know, he's a great cover guy, and he's a good leader for us.
Last two.
I know the coach says things have changed a little bit. You've been around him a long time. You've coached a long time. How much has coach changed over the years with how he runs camp, how he approaches
You know, he's getting a little older. I don't know. He's not getting softer, but he's catching up with the times. You know, I mean, everybody, you know, what's happening now is that the game is changing. You know, it's not as physical as it used to be. You know, we used to have, back when we were at Philly together, we used to have the three, I mean, it was like murder. You couldn't get through, like, 3 days of full pads, you know, and it was like, if you can make it through that, you can make it through anything. You know, that's gone. You know, I had a drill called a star drill. We can't do that anymore, so that's gone. So, really, that's the thing that's changed the most is him adapting to the new rules and, you know, the new ways the players think. They think differently now, and you have to adjust. If you keep being the same, you can't survive in the NFL. You have to change. So his willingness to change.
As a coach, what's your opinion of the Guardian?
I think it's good right now. I mean, it's I don't know if it's going to teach any bad. It's only a couple of weeks that we got to wear it. So I think if it prevents two or three head injuries that you would have had, it's a good thing. You know, because pretty soon they're going to be off and we're going to forget about it.
Thanks,
everyone. Hey, what was the star drill?
The star drill was a drill we did. It kind of looked like a one-on-one kind of coming at each other. But, you know, I could argue against it. But it looked like it was something that they didn't want. We were coming at each other at 5 yards. And one guy was a blocker and one guy was trying to get off the block. But there was a little bit of a collision there. And if you watched it on tape from afar, not being at the drill, if you were somebody in the NFL office, boom, it looked like, you know, something. It looked like the Oklahoma drill, and that's something they didn't want. So they just, nope, you're not doing that anymore.
Coach, we see Coach Reed every day. We cover him since 13. Do we forget how special he is and how successful he's been?
Yeah, he's a special guy. I mean, he's so consistent. That's the thing that stands out. That and his attention to detail. And it filters down through all the other coaches, you know, offense, defense, special teams. We're all the same way now over time. So that's what makes them great.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Dave.
Yep.
I thought it was a good session with Dave Tobe. But there were a lot of names. Like, he gave you a lot of clues about some guys that have the inside track to making this football team, Nate.
There was a lot. I mean, I was scribbling notes that entire time. Man, there was a lot of... Yeah, like you said, clues. First of all, so when he said that we don't have one when it comes to the punt returners because he was dropping a lot of balls, was that about Hardman?
I think maybe more about the other guys, but the punt returners didn't have a good day yesterday. He was mad about that.
But I thought that was a clue toward the fact that sounds like they are planning on using Hardman a lot more at wide receiver. Because he said, you know, hey, like Tyreek, we had to back him off on punt returns because he was getting so much run out at wide receiver. Might have to have some, you know, do that with Hardman. So I thought that was actually an indication about what we could see on offense. Big one for me, man, this Pacheco kid just keeps getting run, right? Like when Deron Cherry spoke with us, he talked about how incredible he looked. Adam Teicher made it sound like he thinks Pacheco could be the number two running back to start off the season the way things are trending right now. And Dave Tobe tells us he is going to be the guy to get the first crack at kick returner in place of Byron Pringle, who's gone. So that one stood out to me a lot. Elijah Lee, he said has been what was the outstanding was the word he used on Elijah Lee.
So, he loves Noah Gray.
Yeah.
Is a four-phase guy. He thinks Jermaine Carter is a replacement for Ben Neiman for him. And then Justin Watson, man. When Patrick Mahomes talks about Justin Watson and then Dave Tobe talks about Justin Watson, unless you totally just go ahead and poop the bed, you have I think you have an excellent chance of making this football team. And so we mentioned Deion Bush. Yeah, there was a lot there. I thought it was really interesting. And he mentioned, you know, Watson is the guy who could replace Marcus Kemp, and Marcus Kemp was his guy as a four-faced guy. So interesting stuff there from Dave Tobe. We'll be back after this on WHB.